Good evening. It's Wednesday night and it's 7 o'clock. This particular Wednesday evening at this particular 7 o'clock, we're working our way through Secret Talks Volume 5 by E.J. Gold entitled Work of Groups. And by some miracle, we've made it all the way to page 146, Ivan.
Yes.
I'm just amazed that that's occurred. I don't know how it happened.
We're past halfway.
But it did happen, and here we are, ready to continue. That all these whole series that were of chapters are on now, very, very short. But they're packed with various things. And we're going to cover chapter 58 in some detail, and 59 as well. There's two kernels in both of those that we're going to get to. They're very important. But before we do any of that, this is a class on work of groups. And before we get started on the next chapters, we then reflect on our previous week. And our scribe has culled out from our work of the last week's group, Ivan, those elements that constitute what is the essence of a group and group work. And so that's in our little notebook here. And I'd like, if you were up for it, to please read that.
Okay. Wednesday, 10/18/17. Work of Groups, number 31. Roman number 1, functions of the group. 1, an example of work of groups is that coming together as a group is like a single collected mind. In the same way, one may carry on an inner dialogue, questioning within ourselves if one is going the right direction. We might find several personalities within ourselves just as we gather in a group. We have this one mind speaking within ourselves. What are the ways I can share self-remembering with others? 2. The above example is like saying we are all one, and when we have a common intentionality that we lay on the table and share. It's like what we've brought to our buffet to make a fine meal. Let's read that again. The above example is like saying we are all one, and when we have a common intentionality that we lay on the table and share, it's like what we've brought to our buffet to make a fine meal. 3. So work in group is like a practicum. We have data available to us, and we come together and we put the data to practice. 4, from page 141. Quote, a special group dinner could be a feeding of data, end quote. Continue. There are conditions that lend themselves to the transmission of data. That's not understanding. The understanding is up to the individual. Understanding comes if the person uses the data and manifests as in opening a gallery, which refers to the example given earlier when referring to EJ's transmission of, quote, getting in the flow, unquote, in regards to being in the work. 5, the data is not all information. The words are not the full transmission. The words are a means of exchange, but there's far more to the transmission. That's why we talked about the importance of hearing from each other.
Thank you. Harry, are you there tonight?
I am indeed, David.
Well, good. Good, good, good. I'm glad you're there. It's good to hear your voice. I'd like this to be, I'd like us to read this next chapter, and I'd like the all the class to participate.
Okay.
And
that's good.
I was wondering, Harry, if you would like to get us started, and then, George, you read the second paragraph, if that's okay with you.
Sure. Would be my pleasure.
Okay. Go ahead. Launch the ship, Harry.
Chapter 58, Carrying the Banner. Three types of activities attract people to study groups. Mental types will be attracted by challenge. Physical types by something addictive, like movements. Emotional types will be attracted by someone to follow.
When G is gone, two kinds of people will carry his banner. The devious and the direct. The direct will insist we meet in a similar meeting room, the group leader must wear a bathrobe, etc., etc. The devious will say, aha, the old man is finally out of the way. They will use work ideas to justify all the things they like.
Dan, do you have a phone over there? Can you read the next paragraph?
Whatever their peculiarity or craze, they will find something G said, or even add a clause of their own to his instructions.
Would you like to read?
Can you help? G is looking for a few resourceful workers with self-honesty and impartiality toward their machine activities and preferences, who can adapt the work to the time, place, and circumstances, and present the essence of the work without distortion.
Ivan, do you want to finish this up, please?
When he asks us to do some work, we should be able to show our work and be willing to accept critique on it.
It's kind of a strange chapter in a way. I mean, particularly that last paragraph, it was like an afterthought that somebody added in to the talk that they were...
You think so? I think it's like a little short capsule on what might have gone on for another 45 minutes.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like, it seems to me like there was this dynamic talk, and G got into the mode of what happened. I mean, it starts out with who comes to a study group.
Mm-hmm.
And there's these three types, which I thought was very interesting, you know, that the physical type comes, that they're looking for something addictive. Isn't that interesting? Something you can do over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the gym, you'll see a bunch of them over there.
Right.
And the mental person wants a challenge, and then the emotional, bhakti yoga, give me someone to follow. That's enough. Fascinating. And then he says, what happens, now it would have been interesting to have been at the talk.
Yeah.
Then the next paragraph says, when G is gone, right, then there'll be two kinds of people will carry the banner. What do you think he means by the banner?
You know, one possibility, of course, is it's the banner of the fourth way, perhaps.
Sure.
David, it's very interesting that our group here, the Austin group, is going to be hosting people who have expressed interest in the various members. They were going to come over to where we meet, the seven of us, and we're going to be discussing a little thing we put together called an introduction to work ideas. And see what's happening. And this is very apropos for what I'm going to probably share with the group before we do that.
Wait till you read the next chapter.
Okay.
This is a good evening for you then, Harry.
Yeah, it's bang on.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you do this without running them off? You don't want to misrepresent the work or the teacher, yet everybody has their own things that they like, so we're having to iron this out to try to keep it clean.
But in the following paragraph, the paragraph at the top of 147, he gives the formula.
Honesty and impartiality toward your own machine activities. That's easier said than done.
Assuming that we can't be fully impartial or fully honest, let's say you have enough self-reflection, Ivan, that you know you can't be fully honest about yourself or impartial.
Yes.
How would you proceed? How would you then proceed? You know you can't be, yet this is a critical element of proceeding. What would be some of the elements that you can come to bear? Dan, what do you think? What's over there? What are the tools that you would use knowing that you can't be impartial about yourself or even self-reflective? Self-honesty. Can you be honest? Can you be honest about this, Ivan?
Intermittently.
So what's a good tool that you would bring to the table here?
David, can't we just acknowledge that we don't know what we're doing? Can't we just acknowledge that we aren't in touch? That's being honest.
And then how do you proceed? How do you proceed from there?
Go ahead.
Well, and I might suggest something along these lines when EJ talks in Human Biological Machine about resurrecting our essential self, that is, moving the center of our gravity of personal identity from our historical personality to our essential self. What we discover as that essential self grows and becomes more autonomous and independent is that it actually is honest. It is self-honest, and it is impartial because it is what it is, which is a particle of divinity. And so while we might always, and by the way, once our center of gravity is located in our central self, it can look at our historical personality objectively, impartially, critically, and recognize what the strengths and the weaknesses of the historical personality are, where it's likely to be easily criticized or positively praised in other ways. But this particular paragraph, I think, refers to a developed essential self that is always self-honest and always impartial because that's the only thing it knows.
Very, very good.
First of all, this particular paragraph is extremely challenging because it's saying that's the standard you need to have to carry the banner. Right? That's the standard you need to have. And Silverdale is telling us, and this is something I think we've discussed for years now, that there's a balance that we are two, as indicated in the Human Biological Machine, we are two separate and distinct electrical beings. One is the historical, we're calling the historical personality, and the other one is the essential self. And there's a dance that goes on between the two. For the most part of most people's life, the historical personality is just absolutely dominant, and the essential self blips up in every once in a while, and that's it. Mm-hmm. But if you focus on the essential self, it starts to, I don't know if it really is called grow, or rather be unveiled in a certain way. And it starts to have the position that Silverdale is telling us of one of its absolute characteristic is self-honesty and impartiality. So as you're flopping around toward that goal, what do you do? Dan seems to know.
Well, I don't actually know what I mean, I don't have a formula, but what I recall is that there's a certain aspect of the work where if you are in a post and you are performing a function, there that places necessities, there are necessities that appear, which you are then, you're obligated to somehow meet those.
You rise to the occasion.
Yes.
But you might be saying, right?
Yes.
So if you put yourself in that position of carrying the banner, you can either act like the people that are described in paragraph 2, or you rise to this occasion indicated in this paragraph number 4 here.
And one thing that comes to mind is that since you would now have an obligation towards other people, these new newcomers, let's say, that forces you to evaluate your conduct.
How often do you notice yourself evaluating your conduct in a case like that? You've been here. You've been the house mother when there's a group house, right? You're kind of in charge at that point, aren't you?
Yeah.
Tell me what goes on.
I never feel like I know what I'm doing, but I notice sometimes that something needs to be said or done, and I just do that.
You never feel like you know what you're doing,
right?
But you do it anyway. Go ahead, Marvette.
Well, I think that actually the strategy that Harry was describing about using the group helps to pull out of an individual's viewpoint of partiality, and allows you to possibly approach a more impartial view using the group, as well as honesty, because you can't see yourself necessarily very well, but others can see you, and so therefore that's, I think, a good way of using the group.
Do you think you have an honesty meter?
I think one can have an honesty meter.
Let me rephrase the question. Do you think you have an honesty meter?
You know, I think it comes and goes.
Okay. I think you do, and I think you know that it comes and goes. And I remember one of the great battles that we had when we had one of these big, giant community meetings, you know, and I was part of the focus. And it was a conversation with myself about my own personality and Kelly and our relationship, which from time to time sometimes was volatile, right? And I remember watching in my brain when I decided, whatever that means, to express my ego about her behavior. So the self-reflection was there, and I let the power of the machine, and of course that erupted into an enormous screaming match. Okay?
Right.
So, okay, go ahead then.
Bernie LaPont says, neither attracted nor repelled.
If you can hold that neither attracted, that is a seasoning that can be placed upon your own self-reflection, and it will help you get to the place of this self-honesty. I'm going to say another one, and that's like a little dose of paranoia. A little paranoia about how you doing. If you work, I mean, it's a tool to kind of like separate you a little bit from your historical personality, and so you're not totally concrete with it. And then it helps you get into the place that Silverdale is telling us about, that when the essential self is founded, it's founded on this sense of pure objectivity and impartiality. It just says the truth as it's before it. Fascinating.
I was going to say, David, that I think that you can approach this or build up this impartiality by the self-observation, you know, self-remembering or self-observation, you know, that you're not just going to become impartial, invoke impartiality, you know, in a given moment or whatever, unless you've worked at it. I think the impartiality is a product of an effort.
It's a product of an effort, and it's an effort of self-reflection. It all comes back down to what we've been discussing for a few years here, and that's your own sensing mechanism. Like, in that particular meeting that I was in, I knew where I was headed, and I just indulged in it, okay? Mm-hmm. But I could sense that I just took a different path right then. So can develop your sensing mechanism to the extent where you can sniff, are you being honest about what you're saying and doing? What are your motives? Because look at that paragraph too. Some of these guys come in to take over these groups, and they're just power hungry.
Yeah. Well, I think I also don't think we should pass by what Marvette said, because she articulated something which is, you know, I was going to make a similar comment, you know, regarding this paragraph at the top of 147. Since it says G is looking for a few resourceful workers, you know, with these qualities, it suggests to me that the solution for my lapses or, you know, my mechanicality and so on is not to think about being a fearless leader, but to think about working as a group,
wow,
working in a team with other people among whom we have, with an agreement among us that we're going to reflect to each other, is, are you being candid? Is that honest? Is this the truth that you're saying right now?
So another mechanism that we can use is that when this event occurs, rather than somebody emerging as another leader, it's the group mind leads us. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it does. And isn't that what Harry's talking about in his group right now?
Indeed. Yeah, Harry, you're talking about your whole group participating in communicating to these others, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think this may be a joke of EJ's, you know, at the beginning of this talk, you know, regarding who's going to carry the banner. But, I mean, yeah, I think he may very well be saying that carrying the banner is not something that you want to do at all. In other words, he's saying that this one type is going to absolutely imitate the teacher. Like, my teacher did this. The bathrobe thing is obviously a joke.
Correct.
My teacher gave talks in the bathrobe, so I'm going to emulate him. I'll put on a bathrobe and come into the dining room and give talks in a bathrobe. And this is obviously nonsensical. Like, that is not going to make me either impartial or awake or anything.
But
and neither is the other thing.
I have a bathrobe.
Yeah, right. Well, good. Maybe your bathrobe will work. I don't think mine will.
Excellent.
But, yeah. And the other thing, and he's saying that the other thing isn't going to work either, like saying,
that's right.
Oh, well, I'm not like the teacher. I'm who I am, and since I want to eat a lot of spaghetti, so I'm just going to have people have spaghetti dinners at all of our meetings.
Correct. So
that I can eat spaghetti.
Neither of those two ways work, but maybe, as Marvette is telling us, maybe it's the group that rises to that occasion.
Well, he says in this paragraph on 147, he's looking for people who can adapt the work to the time, place, and circumstances and present the essence of the work without distortion. So the essence of the work has to remain undistorted, but the appearance of the work may completely change.
May completely change because the artist is different, or the group of artists are different, in their presentation. Very well put, that second part of that paragraph.
Just to comment on Dan's comment, I think we see a similar type of thing, not that the artist changes, but in this school, the form changes so much that if you're just looking from the outside, it looks like it's different, but the essence of the work is the same. It's a slightly different point, but it's along the same line.
No, exactly. You're right. It is a slightly different point because it's the same teacher, but using different methodology. And, you know, in some of the great monastic venues that I've visited, it's always the same, and it's always the same message. So there, it is the essence and the form remain harmonious. But this, I think, is a really wonderful concept out of this chapter, I think, is that maybe that's the form that it takes, is that the group decides. It's the group is the self-regulatory, the governor that keeps it going. And we've seen an example of it with Harry.
Yeah, and also this, I mean, to adapt the work to the time, place, and circumstances, there's no part of that is doing what I like. It's justifying that we should do what I'm adept at, let's say, or what I like, or what suits me.
Anyway. Right. No. That's
some kind of a reflection or a sensitivity or a, what we call it, sensing, you know, some kind of intuition or sensing of what the time, place, and circumstances are call for.
They're very different today than they were when he wrote this, we gave this talk. Very different. We're electronic, we have devices, we have, maybe people have their fewer books.
Yeah.
You know, our print books. But there are a lot. I mean, there's actually a backlash right now that the printed book is emerging again. But let's take a look at that very last paragraph. It seemed a little bit like an outlier. Go ahead and read it to us again, Ivan. Please.
When he asks us to do some work, we should be able to show our work and be willing to accept critique on it.
So, are you willing to get into the game? And are you willing to be in the game, be part of the game, and then let this concept of self-honesty and impartiality be reflected back upon you? And I think the answer is yes. But you have to put yourself in that position, right?
Sure, you have to take on some obligation or some responsibility.
Yeah.
But also, I think part of what he's saying here is that you can't expect to be perfect. You know, to have to be perfectly on every time for everything you do, to not never to make any mistakes, not to need the advice, to need direction.
Do you remember? Do you remember Lisa? And she was, I remember one afternoon, I don't know what was going on, but he had asked her, she was a flute player, among other things, to play a particular piece. And it was fascinating because he had her do it about 5 or 6 times until she got it. There was no escaping. She played it, he goes, yep, you don't got it. Again, no. Oh, my gosh. Please, can you please play it proper? And so she couldn't, like, wilt away.
Yeah, right.
And she finally, I don't know what happened, but she got it. My ear is not nearly that good. Okay?
Well, I was just going to say that critique doesn't necessarily mean criticism. Sometimes it means data, just information that you didn't have that would define your technique, for instance, or something.
But true criticism is critique.
Sure.
It's just what's going on. It's not emotional.
Right.
It doesn't carry good or bad. Exactly right. So we should look at that. We should look to be to have a critique and put ourselves in a position to have that. Okay? Shall we?
Okay.
Deep into should we just read through this one again, Evan?
Well, these are quite short.
Yeah.
Chapter 59, you want me
to
start again? Notes on group work. Someone who lies to himself cannot be helped, so forget about him. The practical exercises given as a 24-part exercise in Volume 2 provide the best preparation for work on self. Treat them with respect. Recognize they are not going to be without their special difficulties.
Harry, can you read the next paragraph?
Yes. We must know enough to bring someone else to the work.
Silverdale?
What do we want from life that we do not get in ordinary ways?
Good question.
The price of admission to a study group, to actively participate in a discussion group for 6 months. Go ahead, Dan.
Sponsorships to get someone to replace us. This is a test of resourcefulness. Nurse them through the first 6 months. They must continue to be reliable, functioning replacements, or we will be constrained to find another before we can continue.
Okay.
The price of admission to a work group. To lead a functioning study group. A minimum of 8 people for 3 years.
Good.
We must be able to demonstrate resourcefulness and understanding of the ideas by our ability to bring others into the work in order to earn our own initiations.
How do you like that? So just naturally, Harry, can you tell us about your project or your group then?
Well, sure. I mean, it's not really detailed. We've each of us, there's 7 of us, and we've been doing this for 10 years now. We decided it was time to invite others and that have expressed interest to each of us individually. And how were we going to do that? We discussed having a dinner, doing a dinner like was traditional when the Gurdjieff work. We decided that we didn't want to do that for a variety of reasons. And we thought we'd just sit and ask them to participate in our study group and just bring them, but we would alter the material to ask them things like this the very same question, what is it that they want from life that they're not getting in ordinary life? And what is
right.
it that brought them here? What is it that they hope to get from it? What attracted them to it? And let them talk. And that's what we're going to do. And then after we do this, we'll decide where we're going to go from there.
What was your catalyst? What brought this about?
Well, that is itself a good question. I think we just realized that everybody's really changed in the group. They've really grown as a result of our interaction. And they were reflecting on that once, and someone suggested, well, why don't we share this with other people? And we've all had people express an interest in it. Why don't we invite them? And so a discussion ensued, and we made the decision as a group, like we do everything. We're very collegial in our orientation. And that's where we are. We decided to, the challenge is writing up our kind of an introduction to work ideas that consist of maybe 10 or 15 questions that we think are important.
So you need to do your marketing next.
Well, I guess. I hadn't thought of it as a marketing project.
You know, you have to let people know that you exist, or even if it's word of mouth, you might be inviting people you already know, right?
That could be.
Sure.
There's several Gurdjieff groups in Austin, and there's a church here called the Church of Conscious Harmony, run by Tim Cook, who's a fellow that used to be a Unity minister, and he has a large congregation, and it's a contemplative Christian community. And they do the Gurdjieff work and play Gurdjieff music and are very seriously into the fourth way. But it's very regimented and organized, and we prefer a more relaxed setting.
Will you put up a poster or a flyer or something?
We may do that.
Yeah.
We've put on a couple of exhibits shows before, showing the movie Meetings with Remarkable Men. We only had a few people show up for that.
I had great fun when I was trying to organize groups, putting flyers out. Usually in bookstores, you know, I was in L.A., so there's always hundreds of them, esoteric bookstores, and you put the flyers out, and, you know, one or two people come, and then they bring a friend, and it's always interesting. Brand new people. I haven't had the courage here to do that.
Well, we thought it would be work better if we just had friends that we personally talked to that think we're genuinely interested rather than advertising like we're putting on a garage sale or something. I'll be happy to report to you if it works or not.
Yeah, we're very interested.
Yeah, in other words, that I think in what David's talking about marketing, you guys have qualified leads.
That's right. The low-hanging fruit.
You know, I have a question. Actually, Harry, I have a question for you. This line here on page 148 in chapter 59, where he says, we must know enough to bring someone else to the work. So is this how you all felt after that you had worked together for 10 years, I think you said? Do you know enough to bring someone else to the work?
We hadn't thought of it in exactly that term. We just said we had all benefited so much from doing this, or else we wouldn't have continued to do so. Once a week for 10 years, that's a pretty big deal. So we decided we'd change it from Tuesdays to Sunday nights. We changed it around a little bit. But basically, it's been a constant in our lives. And we thought, gosh, we've benefited. Wouldn't it be nice to share this with people who have expressed interest? And we arrived at that consensus sort of organically. It wasn't to fill a gap. It was to share bounty, if you will.
Right. I think that's the key.
It had a different feel to it.
Like the cup is filled and you'd like to share it.
Yeah, that's closer to us. That's my sense of it.
Okay. So how does this apply? Like right now we're putting a gallery together in Nevada City. I'm not, but I mean, there's some people working very hard at it. Claude, Dick, EJ, Barbara, Jewel, others working very hard to get the gallery going. And does it apply to that as well? work in the gallery? Does your work on self and work with others apply when you're doing sales, like a sales job? You're going to sell the products of the school and artists and things like that.
Well, it always applies, doesn't it?
Always applies. No matter what you're doing, if you're working from the point of view of that Silverdale was telling us, where the essential self has that weight, then you're always proselytizing. It's not like I used to, when I was in the Christian, born-again Christian, I used to proselytize in a whole other way.
Mm-hmm.
That lasted about 6 months.
Well, I think that in this, yeah.
Go ahead, Silverdale.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, when we think of what, if we think of proselytizing, of course, if we're working from the historical personality, we're going to use the tools available to the historical personality. We're going to use our thought processes, our associative thought processes, our tongue. We're going to use jargon or lingo that is part of the tool set of the historical personality. However, once our essential self is activated, we discover it has a life independent of the physical body, independent of the historical personality, and that it can actually communicate with the essential self of another person because it has a different tool set with which to do that kind of thing. So the other person may, to a greater or lesser degree, be aware that our essential self is speaking or addressing or working with their essential self. But, you know, I think that's a lot what EJ does. You know, it's his essential self working on us, and we, of course, instantaneously translated into terms our historical personality would, you know, be familiar with, but might be completely incorrect in terms of interpreting what's actually happening. And so, if you're opening a gallery, yes, you're going to talk about whatever works are available for sale, perhaps, or who you're associated with. But maybe your essential self is actually functioning behind the screen, so to speak.
That's right. Yeah. And allow it to do it. So that's part of what is meant by that third paragraph there, that it says, we must have enough to bring someone to the work. We must have enough of the essential self in operation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the marketplace, I think the traditional idea there with like the seller of copper in the marketplace, something like that, there's something else that you're offering, but it's not, you know, it's not the same necessarily. It's not necessarily just the goods that are for sale. So you have something to offer, and then you have to exercise the discernment. You have to know when you have someone, a customer, in front of you for that which is something apart from ordinary life, from mechanical life.
Yeah. When you're in the selling space, in a sense, you capture the person with your attention and talking about the piece of art or jewelry or whatever it is, and you're talking to them at the same time this emanation is occurring,
yep,
as we talked last chapter. That's coming out. So your words are one thing, but your electrical presence is a different thing. Right, Silverdale?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
So we're actually working on two channels at the same time. Where is your consciousness? And I think that we have to allow ourselves to say, I do have enough to bring someone to the work. It's not an ego thing at all. It's just turning your attention to that and letting it operate as well. Okay, make sense?
Mm-hmm.
What else? So the paragraph two there, of course, he's talking about practical work on self, which is a standard for many of us. It's a critically important book. We've been through it so many times. We haven't been through it in the last 8 or 10 years, I guess. But
really? 8 or 10 years?
Well, it's been about maybe 8 years, right? Did that? That's one with Georgia. We did with Teresa Dietze. Remember?
Yeah, that's about 5 years, 6 years ago, maybe. Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. But it's profoundly important work, and the last phrase in that paragraph where he says, recognize these are not going to be without their special difficulties. They become difficulty if you actually do them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Inevitably, yes.
So if you actually do the thing,
yes,
it has difficulties because
yeah,
it's introducing the historical personality to something that it's not used to. And that's where the fun comes in. If you're interested in that kind of fun.
Actually, I thought it was interesting. But to add something regarding the gallery, like the idea of a gallery space in Nevada City or anywhere, you know, the there is a benefit. I mean, there's a kind of support or, you know, an energetic boost that you're getting from being in a space that has artifacts from the school, artifacts from, you know, anything related to the work at all. So, like, in a way, you can also, you can have greater likelihood or greater percentage, let's say, of having the emanation of the essential self going on if you're inside, if you have a magic circle. And I just wanted to point out that, Harry, that you guys are talking about doing something similar to that.
Yep.
You have 10 years of work in your group, and so just the idea that you're inviting someone to come and sit in your group and interact with you, you're having the added success factor or energy factor of drawing somebody, a novice or somebody from outside into your magic circle.
Yes, it's a kind of a gift from our circle to them.
Yeah, there's energetic pattern or phenomenon.
And he's offering that to them.
Yeah. I'm just saying because I have worked in, you know, both in, let's say, booths that show, you know, like these,
sure,
like a craft fair,
jewelry
show, a booth, you know, essential oils or whatever. Any presentation in the marketplace, it may be in a very rowdy, it may be in a very noisy or distracting environment, but it's always, especially if you're working with other people, again, you work as a team, you have an encapsulated space. There's a little bubble, you know, there's a magic circle of some small circumference that you now have the opportunity to interact with other people in. You're drawing them in. And I mean, I've certainly experienced that in, if the Institute has a business, you know, a public contact business, you can experience a very magical quality at times. I mean, you know, not 24/7 in that space, but it's a, what do you call it? It's a portal. It's a opening.
Sure it is.
It's an opening to have vibrational changes in your interactions with people. And that would be a good way to put it. Like to change vibrational levels, you know, to actually be able to bounce around an energy level.
And if there's a purchase, then it's also a souvenir of that experience, you know, which we've had. But let's touch base on the very last paragraph. We must be able to demonstrate resourcefulness and understanding of the ideas by our ability to bring others into the work, and then in order to earn our own initiation. What do you think about that?
David, I might just suggest that, you know, as it's been mentioned before, the only initiation, the only genuine initiation is self-initiation, in which we are using ourselves as our own guinea pig, as an objective scientist ourselves, to see what happens when we try different things. And so as our essential self begins to develop its own autonomous independence and begins to interact with the surrounding circumstances, it becomes educated about exactly what its possibilities are and what are what things contribute to a better manifestation, or what things hinder its manifestation.
Right.
And so that's what I would think. We earn our own initiations by conducting our own experiments with our own essential self, which has become a self-sufficient and independent, functioning, autonomous part of ourselves. So that's what I'm thinking.
By being a teacher of others, too, and I use that term in a very limited way, you know, when you're bringing somebody in, you also are initiated into your own. Where is your essential self? You know, there's like a self-reflection. You know, we've done things together, Silvica, where we go out into the public and do stuff.
Right.
And if you do it together, it's actually quite a treat. You go out, like working in the shop would be like that, but you go out together and interact, and you're noticing where you are as a moment of self-honesty and self-reflection.
Right.
What do you got over there, Dan?
Sandra says, we thank everyone for their ideas and suggestions about bringing others into our community. They will be very helpful to our efforts. These are gifts from this group to ours. We have come to believe that work in the future will no longer be transmitted by individuals or books, but by living groups.
Well put. The modality is changing. There's no question, and we have to adapt with it. The times are very, very different than they were 45 years ago. The methods, the methodology, the forms, the patriarchy of certain things is modifying itself. And we have to be adaptive to that and see if there's a different way to proceed. And I think that's what we discover.
Yeah, actually, I really appreciate what Pianjo is saying there, because I think it's been, you know, my experience in seeing, interacting, observing younger people, you know, in a community college where I teach part-time,
right,
and looking at millennials and looking at this generation, I guess it's my opinion or my current view of this, the more that I see of it, my reaction tends to be that a lot of these developments in modern life are isolating individuals. People are not communing with one another. They're not communicating. You know, they're not drawing close together. They're not breaking down, you know, as much as we'd like, you know, as much as we're making progress in the laws,
right,
and in various social arenas and social, in the realm of social justice and so on and so forth, I don't see that there's a lot of socialization going on. And I think that this idea that people are, there's something that's not available in ordinary life, and I think that one of the things that's very dramatically not available in ordinary life is the a sense of being in unity, of being in collaboration and in unity, and breaking down the barriers with some circle of other people. You know, and I think that this can be presented to young people now. It has to be presented very diplomatically and very gently, because it's actually liable to scare them.
I don't think it's just young people.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm just saying that it's my impression that a lot of the patterns, you know, the habits and the patterns and the technology of the culture and so on, are pushing people into greater isolation.
I agree with you, Evan. And I know a lot of adults that spend very, very, very little time with others. Very little time. They're functionally isolated, though they may go to jobs and things like that. They have no social contact. Not just the young people.
Yeah, okay.
You know, people our age. And
the culture in general.
It's a cultural thing. And the one thing that Harry and Silverdale were talking about is placing, you know, having a place where people can actually talk one with another. A wonderful and unusual thing.
Yeah, well, actually, I think that it's impossible to overestimate the value of a safe space.
Nice.
For people.
Nice.
Like what it means for there to be a safe space. I mean, I've literally, you know, actually this just happened to me recently. I had a student email me and like, you know, thank me for allowing a certain discussion to go on in class because it was a rather controversial issue and various points of view were expressed. And I got the idea, oh, okay, so this particular student is not used to, you know, any kind of an environment where free speech is
common.
Free speech is allowed and also protected, supported or whatever. You know, just interchange, free interchange of ideas.
So, Harry, I think an element of group that I think is important for you guys to study when your group gets together again is the concept of demonstrating a safe space. For instance, maybe people in your group, let's say there's two or three or four brand new people, what if people in your group share their own self-reflections? And that would help others in the newcomers see, oh, it's okay to talk about stuff like that. Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying?
Oh, indeed I do. I'm writing very fast here.
Because I think that that's something that's important to me in this group is to demonstrate. That's why sometimes I talk about my historical personality, because I want others to see I'm not doing it because about my personality or trying to work out problems. I'm like saying to the system, I'm declaring to the world, I am not that. But I can point to that, and I'm okay with pointing to that, because I am fundamentally and functioning an essential self. And that's just some of the baggage I have. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you, David. Those are excellent ideas.
I'm very excited to hear how it might go for you guys, okay? We'll look forward to that in the next month or two.
Yes. Thank you.
Anything else? How are we doing? Doing okay over there, Dan? Okay. Well, we'll leave it at that then. And we'll look forward to seeing you next Wednesday at 7 o'clock when we'll start in on chapter 60. Mm-hmm. To be alive, finally.
To be alive.
After all this time.
I'm glad we arrived.
Okay. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you.